welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Stan Dale from standale.com. Always a crowd pleaser. Always a crowd pleaser. Just for people wanting to catch up on the news, it's official. Neil Gorsuch from Boulder, Colorado, has been selected by Donald Trump as the as a candidate for approval for the Supreme Court justice position, and of course, youngest Supreme Court nominee, and very conservative. That, according to his history, and all by all accounts, very, very interesting choice, good choice, and one who I believe will follow the Constitution as opposed to one's own moral convictions. Isn't that interesting? And when I say the Constitution, I'm talking about the real Constitution of the United States. And moral convictions, when I say that, the Constitution, that is rooted in the rules of God Almighty as far as the establishment of our republic. But having said that, before we get to Stan, Greenovative, you got to go, folks. Greenovative, they are Alan Riggs. I had to pin him down, duct tape him down. I said, look, man, you gotta give us a deal. Gotta give our audience a deal for Valentine's Day. And what wife would not want a G-Mag power cell battery recharger? Seriously. Or, no, let me rephrase that. What husband wouldn't want that? And I'm serious. It's really a great gift. But for the month of February, in the month of February only, a 14% off savings. That's right. Of their entire purchase for the month of February of all of their products. Go to greenovative.com. That's greenovative.com. And you can thank me later because I duct taped Alan Riggs to a chair. Made him sign a piece of paper. He did. That's fine. Greenovative.com for Super G-Mag package. The Super G-Mag Complete gives you more batteries and adapters at a reduced price. Also offering a Valentine special, 14% off for this month only. And again, I had a really, Alan, I'm sorry, brother. But see, it didn't leave any marks, right? But this is what a great deal for listeners. Just use our coupon code Hagman. And also, Minuteman Stove, MinutemanStove.com. You got one of these? Well, get them both for Valentine's Day. MinutemanStove.com, the Minuteman Rocket Stove, perfect survival cooking stove for you and your family. Let me tell you, it uses less wood. It's a 50 caliber ammo can. Its design features a lid that's got a rubber seal and a carrying handle. Weighs only 14 pounds. Travels clean. No smells. No soot. Get inside your vehicle, your pantry, and it directs the heat where it needs to be. The outside of the stove only reaches about 200 degrees in temperature. Inside, you can cook away. That's Minuteman.com. There, get the Minuteman stove and fire starters, but MinutemanStove.com, MinutemanStove.com. Did I say that wrong the first time? I'll say it right this time, MinutemanStove.com. Joe?
Now we have with us, as we do each and every Tuesday, in hour number three, Stan Dale from standale.com. Go to his website, bookmark it, and on the right-hand side of the site, if you scroll down a little bit next to the microphone, is the show images link, and you can click there and follow along with the research Stan has put together for his appearance on our show and go through the links with us. Stan, it's great to have you back on the program.
There's news today, isn't there?
A little bit.
It just keeps coming.
It does. I'll tell you what, I think that, the Democrats put themselves in a corner when they made that nuke option in the Senate, because if they give him any trouble, I'm sure that that's what's going to happen. And he's such a young man with all that qualification. I mean, goodness gracious. 49. He's 49, and he got, he went to Harvard, where he got his jurisprudence degree, and Oxford, a PhD there, a BA in Columbia. I mean, the guy is good. And, of course, he's a fourth-generation Coloradan. I got to say that.
That's right. I was thinking about you when his name surfaced earlier today in some leaks. I was thinking, I was doing in my head, how far away is he from Stan and Holly? But anyway,
2 hours. 2 hours.
2 hours. Yeah. See.
Yeah.
You were probably over barbecue at his house this past summer, I'll bet you. Anyway. Just a beautiful family, very socially and morally conservative. And in fact, Hobby Lobby comes to mind. So those little tiny explosions you hear, especially if you live in the urban areas, those are the progressive Marxist, Leninist, communist, their heads exploding. You just
like that commercial with the purple cloud coming out.
That's right. That's right.
He's against euthanasia. He's written about it. I mean, it's not just a whim or passing thing, and he's in favor of political term limits. I mean, boy, the guy just got all pluses by his name.
But you know what's funny, Stan, and a lot of people use Wikipedia as a reliable source. What's really funny, I checked Wikipedia just to be sure of a couple of things, and the somebody had edited real quick here under the radar. They said he is a homophobe and a proponent of gay rights. Now, it doesn't even make sense, that statement, but I think what they meant to write was an opponent, so they couldn't even screw it up properly. But nonetheless, I'm sure that'll be changed in the next couple of hours. But
he's pro-life.
Yeah.
And there's a number of other, as you said, the check marks are all in the plus column from what I've read.
Yep.
Yeah. Hey, we'll be taking the names down fairly soon of the 10 winners of the Dare to Prepare books that we gave away. But we did want to tell the people that they should be seeing them, if they haven't already got them, they should be seeing them the next couple of days, because they, you know, the post office book rates and stuff take 7 to 10 business days. So don't panic if you haven't seen it yet. They're on the way, or there in some cases. So congratulations.
Yeah, we
want to
thank
again.
You for that. Yeah, you know, that's really generous of both you and Holly. And folks, and let me tell you something. Research costs money. Now, I got an email. Well, you know, everything's just for sale and stuff. Well, here's Stan and Holly giving away 10 books worth a lot of money. Time, blood, sweat, and tears put into the books, the book itself. And thank you for that. Thank you for your generosity. But let me tell you, research costs money. To do that research costs money. And it's unfortunate that people have this expectation. Well, you know, everything should be free. It's not. But, man, you made it great with this. And our audience thanks you. They love you. You and Holly.
Well, they do. They do. And, you know, we do this 2 or 3 times a year. We have various types of books or accommodations that we give away. And so there'll be another 1 or 2 of these, Lord willing, later in the year. So keep coming to the site and register when it's time. Now, you've seen our show images page today. There are a few things to talk about. What strikes your fancy?
Well, you know, you did put a lot of stuff up there, and one of the first things I noticed were I thought the first 3 maps were of earthquakes, but the 2 of the 3 maps are the volcanoes. If we can start by talking about the volcanic activity around the world, that would be a good place.
Okay. Images 20 and 21 are about the active, spewing, erupting volcanoes. There are 29 of them on image 21. Sorry, image 20, which is showing only the red ones, which are the ones erupting. Then you go over to image 21 and add in those that are active but not erupting yet. They're on the verge of it. And so between them, there's 59 volcanoes, mainly around the arc of the Pacific, the Ring of Fire. But we're seeing some of them in unusual places, which Holly brought to my attention a few minutes ago, like over in Ethiopia. There is a volcano there. It's the gateway to hell, they call it. It's erupting. You can see links to that article at image 22, but and 24 is to Kilauea in Hawaii, also erupting. But these things are indicative to me of, you know, deep mantle movements coming up into these weak fissure areas. Now, the one over in Ethiopia is rather interesting because it's just, 200 or 300 miles kind of down the Great East African Rift from the Garden of Eden. And strangely enough, there is another volcano erupting there in Africa at the Garden of Eden, and it's called Oldoinyo in the local tongue, which means the mountain of God, and it's erupting. So you see that erupting in the the river from it, where mankind left the Garden of Eden and went across into Saudi Arabia. That's another story. But right there at Ethiopia, at the border between that and Eritrea, you see a massive hot, you know, volcano. It's almost like God's kind of going back and saying, right, I'm going to rip this area apart, you know. There may be more to it than that, but I'm just saying that they're just, it's an interesting coincidence that two volcanoes have become active over there, and one in the Garden of Eden area, right, you know, on the rim of it, and the other one in Ethiopia, which is where Adamic man migrated down into Saudi Arabia to start the human population, you know, the created ones. But, yeah, and if you look at the map on 21, which has everything on it, you see that there's a little orange one down north of New Zealand. And that one is called the Zipper Island, the Zipper Volcano. When that one starts to become active, I watch it, and so do the New Zealanders, very closely, because if it erupts in a big way, or as the president would say, bigly, when it erupts bigly, it's going to tear fissures all the way down into Lake Taupo. All along there's a weak line, you know, faults, sub-faults that go right up to White Island. So they watch it closely, because if that one goes and triggers eventually Lake Taupo to erupt, which is a caldera covered with water, that one could possibly erupt bigger than Yellowstone did, and it certainly has done it within the last 2,000 years.
Yeah, it's going to be huge. I don't mean that.
Huge. Very huge.
Huge, yeah. Yeah. Wow, that's... Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's... you can see these areas are also earthquake prone. The two go together with the weakening of the Earth's mantle, the breaking up of it. Even the Azores over in the northern Atlantic along the ridge there just west of Spain and west of the Canaries as well, that has a number of earthquakes, which we can see in image 19, but it also has a minor activity possible eruption alert for a volcano there. So volcanoes are becoming the end thing at the moment around the planet. I'm watching that fairly closely. Anyway, back to image 19, sorry. That's a global map, interactive map of recent earthquakes over the last 2 weeks to give us a pattern. And you can see, I was telling you about Watch New Zealand. If you look where New Zealand should be on the map, it is covered with so many earthquakes that it's just a red glob. You see that?
Yep.
Now that's telling us it's not only White Island, there's all kinds of things happening in North and South Island. There's stress reliefs going on over the last 2 weeks that are of interest. Now, mind you, they're only about, you know, fours to fives and stuff like that, but bigger things have come from that area not too long ago, a Richter 7.9. So keep an eye on that. Look over in the Mediterranean, from Italy all the way over to Turkey and in between Greece and all those. There's a lot of earthquake activity there as well in a cluster. And that is along a tectonic plate border that reaches from down in Indonesia back up through China and around and over into the Mediterranean, and from there over in toward the United States. There is one great connective fault or plate tectonic border that, if that whole thing were to release the pressure all at once, would be that giant earthquake the Bible talks about, bigger than any we've ever had. And that could certainly release. And so we're seeing a little bit of a tremor activity there in the Mediterranean, which is part of that joiner fault line, if you wish, across the United States. Other than that, Japan is certainly very active at the moment. And Southern California, no, middle to Southern California, is active. It's always active, but it too is forming a cluster. And west coast of Argentina and Chile and Peru and Ecuador, these things are all active and starting to cluster. So keep an eye. There's a link up there to interactive map. You can say, this is where I want to go, and go to that website. It's a NASA Terrametrics imagery. But anyway, have a look at that and watch it over the next few weeks. You can set the time period you want to look at and try to get an idea of where all these crustal movements and pressures are being released. I think this is important, guys. I mean, to see this many volcanoes and earthquakes, you know, all happening together in these notably hot spots tells me that there's movement afoot, you know, and there's something else I'll tell you about in a second, which does put credence to that. If you want to look at the Azores, go to image 23, and you can see that they're enlarged so that you can see all the earthquakes are happening. There's one volcano in the middle of that somewhere, and they're on the fault line coming from the Canaries over to the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. So there's another kind of triangulated plate tectonic meeting that is under stress, like the one in Ethiopia. Very interesting stuff. Very interesting.
There have been increased reports I've seen this week to back up what you've been saying. I saw two separate reports on Drudge between yesterday and today. One, you know, is a huge earthquake around the corner, and then one, are we getting ready to see a super volcano eruption? And you see those here and there on Drudge, but to see those two stories in the last 2 days in conjunction with what you're saying, as well as I saw you had a story up about the coronal hole in the sun also. There seems to be a lot of activity, whether it's leading up to something or not. There definitely is some people who have their eyes open on this because they feel that there is a threat.
People are starting to pay attention to this.
Holly's got a... Holly, you have that link up, don't you, on John Casey about the earthquakes? It's the video of the week. There's a link to it on Image 15 as well, linking back to the same place that she's reporting on the main page. But it's on True News, and it's a radio interview, about 45 minutes or so. But he tells about the increased volcanic activity and the earthquakes and the moon, the sun. All these things are related. The sun is the main driver for the energy distribution throughout our whole solar system, obviously. But when it presents a large coronal hole like you're talking about in image 13, it does not bode well for the health of the sun. This is a very big, very unusual coronal hole. And when you open up a hole like that in that particular layer of the sun, historically what it does is it emits a lot of solar wind out of there, very high energy particles. And of course these strike the earth and produce magnetic storms. And normally you wouldn't expect to see a CME come out of all that kind of stuff, and no sunspots. But in this particular picture, when you look at it, you see that not only is there that great coronal hole, you click on the picture, you'll see that Holly's put a label on it, sunspot 2629, sunspot 2628 is blowing off to the what they call the west of the sun. It looks on the right side of the picture. We could see a CME come out of this. And you know, I hearken back to prophecy again, like in Matthew 24:29. Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened and the moon shall not give her light. Well, of course, the moon reflects the sunlight. So are we looking at the beginning of the entire surface of the sun becoming a coronal hole, you know, going technically cooler in one respect, hotter in another? But not in the visible light spectrum, so you can't see the sun. It'd be like one Bible prophet said it was like looking at a sackcloth of hair, looking through that with little pinholes of light coming up. The majority of the sun's surface is dark. And I've been telling this on the show for years now. The sun is in scripture is going to do some interesting things. It's not going to give us light, but yet it's going to be, you know, as bright as days, you know, like seven times brighter. Of course, the moon will be too. So how can it be dark and how can it be bright at the same time? There are stages it's going to go through. And I suspect that if it does go to that blackened surface, that will be after a lot of other events happen, including throwing off a dense cloud of stuff off the surface of the sun, which, of course, might lead to this large, all-encompassing coronal hole all over the sun. But anyway, the thing is that we're going to see worse before the blackout of the sun, I think, according to Scripture. And these signs are happening right before our eyes. So keep an eye on this. SOHO gives images every day. And watch the area of it. If it increases, then we're getting close to other things happening. We might be seeing, you know, solar EMP or more than one in the next few years. It's just a very unusual behavior from the sun.
Well, and this is not cyclical. This is above any type of potential cyclical things we've seen with the sun. Right?
Yeah, and you know, strangely enough, we're all like this. Scientists and just the average person, you look at events happening around you in the world, and you or even in human relations, you say, well, it has happened with this pattern ever so often, blah, 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 blah. Therefore, it will happen that way again. But in the case of the sun, we're entering a period of time where the past cycles, the past events that we build our statistics on, are not going to apply. It's in a state of change, which is going to present new discoveries, perhaps some very painful ones for the Earth, in our future, our near future.
Very interesting.
We're seeing a confluence of events here. Volcanoes, earthquakes, signs in the heavens, and... wow. If you're not right to me, if you're a guy or a lady out there, if you're not right with God, it's time to, you ought to start, in my view.
Absolutely.
Man.
Not only with preparing with the Lord, because we're all going to meet him one day, one way or another, but also while you're here preparing physically.
Yes.
That's why we've put so much emphasis on Holly's book and on the free website, Dare to Prepare, telling you what to do. You know, step by step, even if you don't have a lot of money, get prepared to be cut off from, you know, a lot of services. There are rumors floating around that there's going to be a meteorite, a large meteorite hit us sometime in March. May or may not happen, I don't know. We don't know these things exactly. So being prepared is being a good Boy Scout. You know, you got to do it. So go to the website, daretoprepare.com, and it's all run together, nothing fancy. But,
and thank you for
dare
that,
to
too.
Prepare.
You know, that does, and folks, that takes a lot of effort to offer that much information, both in book form, website form, but definitely Dare to Prepare, the book, is my favorite. I mean, that is the end-all. That's the go-to book for preparation
and
the story.
And the site, there is free downloads of, like, food planners for your family and all kinds of stuff. Just go and download everything you can and put it on a flash drive if you're worried about an EMP.
There you go. That's right. Yeah, well, I just wanted to just say this. I would be remiss not to mention this. I see that you must have dusted off the VHS tapes, and folks, definitely check these videos out from Stan from 1982-ish and 1997-ish. Dapper as ever. Still dapper today, but they're on the show images page, links to the videos. Thanks for doing that.
Yeah, that video number, image number 5 links to about a 2-minute, 50-second video I made here over the weekend. A lot of interest in it. The video tells about President Donald Trump's favorite uncle, his go-to guy, Professor John G. Trump. Now, Donald John Trump was, you know, John is named after his uncle, John Trump here. Now, I met with his uncle and interviewed him in Boston at the high voltage engineering labs that he had founded. And he died, a few years back, I think 1985, about 3 years after I interviewed him. And this guy was into, with Van de Graaff, invented and made the first big Van de Graaff generators, you know, make the electric sparks out in the air with this rubber bell moving. They made, you know, things that were like 2 stories tall for nuclear research and that kind of stuff. But the thing I was reporting in this two and a half minute video, was that Dr. Trump told me that the FBI came to him and said, look, Nikola Tesla's just died, and we want you to help us open up a package that he left with the front desk of the Hotel New Yorker where he was staying. And that package, he said that they couldn't open it and don't move it around because it was part of a design for a secret weapon that he was working on. And, you know, the FBI guys, two or three agents there, they get a hold of Dr. Trump, and I say, look, at his age, even, they say, look, why don't you go up to the desk there in the Hotel New Yorker lobby, and they'll give you the package, and everybody will move away. We'll be behind these marble pillars about 50 feet away in case it blows up. and they didn't even give him a bomb suit or any kind of protection. They said, you know, open it up, you know, or see if we can open it up without blowing it up. So, you know, Dr. Trump, brave as he was, he had a twinkle in his eye like an Irish when telling a joke, you know, when he was telling me this. He says, those brave FBI agents went and hid behind the marble pillars while I took out my handy pocket knife and kind of looked at the package. It had twine tying up a package wrapped in brown paper. And he said, I picked it up gently and it was heavy. And so I thought, well, I better look for any trip wires or stuff before I cut the twine. And he did. And he felt all over the surface of it for any bumps of something hidden under the paper that might blow up or do something weird. And he found nothing like that. So he cut the twine, put his knife blade under the paper, and opened it up. And inside was this beautiful hand-rubbed wooden chest with a brass latch on it and handles. And he thought, well, okay, here's another thing to open this lid. I'll look around here very closely around the edge for any trip wires and stuff. He did. And so finally he thought, well, I'm going to just do it. He said, I figured I'd go rather quickly if it was a bomb. So he put his knife under there and opened up this thing. And to his surprise, he didn't blow up. And then he motioned to the brave FBI agents, you can come over now, I'll show you what's here. And they were looking for a secret, a message about this super weapon.
Wait a second. That's going to be a great cliffhanger. Okay, hold on.
Weapon after the break.
That's right. Stan Dale from StanDale.com. Oh, I love cliffhangers like this. Stan Dale from StanDale.com. Folks, go to the show images page and also his page, DareToPrepare.com, as well. The books, the winners of the books, on the front page. Get right back, stay right where you're at.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. It'll blow you away. Absolutely, Eric said.
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
New Year from all of us at Trading Post in the Woods.
We pray you have a healthy, safe, and prosperous 2017.
And we would like to thank all of you for welcoming us to the Hagman and Hagman family. You're all a very wonderful and special group of people.
Because we believe it is so important for you to work and acquire good health this year, we're going to do something that we've never done before as a thank you to you for your support. We're going to make something available that we believe everyone needs.
During the month of January, anyone who invests in their health by purchasing either our American Heritage Remedies Kit, our Survivalist Natural Remedies Kit, or $200 in individual remedies of your choice, we're going to give to you our crisis remedy, just in case, for free.
Your health must be a part of your preparation plan. We're here to help you with that journey. May God bless y'all, and may God bless America.
Happy New Year!
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
And welcome back, folks, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Reports. Stan Dale's our guest, standale.com. Stan and Ollie Dale, great people. And the really, their research work product in Stan's book, Cosmic Conspiracy, Holly's books, Dare to Prepare, Prophetic Perils, my goodness, second to none. Visit standale.com and definitely, now's the time. Now is the time, because you think things are bumpy right now? Oh, they're going to get bumpier. And speaking of that, are you prepared in the event of a crisis? How about TradingPostInTheWoods.com? TradingPostInTheWoods.com. One more time, TradingPostInTheWoods.com. It's an American family-owned and operated company that, it provides you with knowledge. God bless you. It provides you with knowledge to empower you, skills to equip you, supplies to sustain and assist you, and like-minded staff to encourage you. This is a great place to start your personal freedom. And I've got to tell you, they've got numerous products. It's like kind of going back in time. They've created the American Heritage Remedies Kit, especially for the Hagman and the Hagman Report listeners. It's a brand new kit. They're discounting just for our listeners. That's right. But they have all sorts of, shall we say, things that you would go into the old Trading Post stores, maybe used by your grandmother, great grandmother, or whatever. A host of natural remedies to address whatever might be ailing you or could be in a crunch. Trading Post in the Woods. They're much more than just about natural alternatives that help you resolve health crises. They're also about empowering you. Visit TradingPostInTheWoods.com. That's TradingPostInTheWoods.com. TradingPostInTheWoods.com. And, in case you were wondering, that Eric's over there sneezing and hacking and he's got, some sort of sinus infection. So, send him your home remedies, right?
Yeah. Before the break, Stan, you were telling us a story.
Yes, a cliffhanger.
Trump's uncle, Dr. Trump, and the Tesla package.
And in the package was...
And he wasn't sure what it was. Yes. Is this where I say, be sure to tune into this station 4 months from now in our next season? No, I wouldn't do that. But anyway, yeah. So he flipped the lid up, and it was a beautifully hand-rubbed, hand-made box to hold what was inside. And instead of a bomb, thankfully, instead of a message and a graph or drawings or anything of the secret weapon, there was nothing. There was just what they call a Wheatstone bridge or a decade resistance box. Now, in the old days, it was like a multimeter, very basic multimeter that people used to measure resistance and inductance and capacitance, all that kind of stuff. But it was beautifully made. It, had brass fittings inside, and it was set up in a binary form, which meant you'd put known resistance values in on either side of what they call a bridge, and it would tell you what the unknown value was that you plug in another hole. But it used what's called a binary method to balance both sides of this circuit to measure the resistance of something. As I say, nowadays a multimeter, you just put a little probe in and it automatically reads it out, no big drama. But in those days, that was the way it was done. So Dr. Trump said to me, he says, "And there was no secret weapon in there. There was no secret to making a super weapon. I mean, it was just, a decade resistance box that he'd wrapped up and told them that so that they could use it as surety against the back rent he owed, several months worth or more, that he owed to the hotel because he was always running poor." And, so I said to Dr. Trump, I said, "Now wait a minute. There was a message there." He said, "Really?" And I said, "Yeah. It was the decade resistance box. It was the function of that box that was the message. If you know all of Tesla's work, he said he matched or balanced things what they call impedances to the flow of energy on one side of an equation and the other side. I said, he was talking about how you could use it, not as a, you don't have to use it as a weapon, you can use it as a method of providing electricity for the entire planet for free. Well, virtually for free, you got to build the equipment. But other than that, it was free, clean, and renewable. And he kind of looked at me and said, really? And I said, yeah, look at your own papers, your own research. Later, I would file a patent on a free energy device like this, quoting Dr. Trump's work in three or four places. And I do give the places on the video there so you can check it yourself. But he had done research back in the 50s, Dr. Trump, on some of Tesla's work as well, but on making very powerful capacitors, you know, between two plates in a vacuum, and seeing how much physical force was generated when he raised the voltage level between them. And so, based on that, he then did experiments that said that if you move one side of a capacitor toward the other one or back and forth, it will generate electricity, you know, as you change the voltage. Well, if you go to the atmosphere, we have two plates. We have the ionosphere, and we also have the Van Allen belt as well as part of that, but the ionosphere, and then you go all the way down to the surface of the Earth, and there's another plate, and there's a charge. I think the one report I read, I think it's a 650,000 volt charge between them or something like that, you know, from outer space to here. But the solar wind beats the heck out of our atmosphere. No matter which side of the planet you're on, it's causing the atmosphere to vibrate at a multitude of frequencies as these protons hit the Earth's charged upper atmosphere. And in essence, what it's doing is it's moving the upper atmosphere and little hits all over it, you know, bombarded with these particles, you know, about a million miles an hour and stuff like that. They're pretty fast. And so you're having all kinds of ripples physically run through the ionosphere down into the Earth's atmosphere, and it shakes or vibrates the entire atmosphere, but at such a high frequency you don't feel it. Now, there is a way, we know what the frequency range is, and there is a way to insert something into the atmosphere at ground level, and that thing can feel those vibrations and convert them to electricity you can use in your home. So this is why I put this video up. I mean, they've already published my patent, which I'll show you there at the last of the video. The patent application was not granted. They said you cannot have a patent because it couldn't work. And they sold told T. Henry Murray, who invented the Murray power source, using the same concept I'm talking about, he had a working model in front of him. And they said, where does the energy come from? He said, well, I don't know, but it's kind of irregular, like the waves at the seashore, you know, high, low, and variable, random. And they said, well, since you don't know where it's coming from, we're not going to grant you a patent. So they turned Dr. Murray away, who had a working model that would generate between 5,000 and 10,000 watts of power continuously without anything, just the antenna and the box that converted it. Now, they put my application on the internet when they should have put it into a box and sealed it. You know, that if they don't grant you the patent, they're supposed to hide that so that nobody else can see it and jump the gun on you, right?
Yeah, you were talking about this last week, and then the subsequent selling the patents to China to see what they can apply and turn into resources. Yeah, that's pretty messed up.
Yeah, well, after our show last week talking about it, I thought, right, I'll put this video up because this is important that people understand where the energy is and how we can get it. We, you know, it wouldn't take but a small team of electrical engineers and with an open mind, and we could build a little box that would take the power that I can get out of the atmosphere and step it down from the high voltage and high frequency down like Murray did. We have all the stuff that we need now in the industry, a lot better components than Murray had. But anyway,
and they'll never let that happen. I mean, the control and the amount of revenue generated from every energy source that we use is way too much for anybody to allow it to be given away for free.
Why do they put it on? Why do they make it public over at the patent office and then leave it there?
It's a good question.
There's enough there.
Maybe for those people who are smart enough to apply it, but knowing the vast majority of people would never be able to apply it and do what it was created for, I would imagine.
I think
you're too skeptical. I think you're too. What's that word?
Cynical.
Cynical. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe so.
No, yeah. I mean, Joe, but you know, interesting nonetheless. Wow.
Yeah. Yes, well, yeah, you know, with the geophysical changes in progress around the planet and getting worse, and also on the sun, you know, getting energy to sustain yourself, you know, would be very important. And, you know, although, you know, the oil pipeline and stuff is going to be put in Keystone from Canada down here, and they're going to take oil sands and convert them, you know, suck the oil out of them, even though they're going to do that, we still have to have backup emergency plans for generating energy for people in survival groups. And I would not think that our present administration, with President Trump at the head of it, would be against preparing emergency power distribution like this, because an acquisition, because it doesn't require a nuclear reactor, it doesn't require burning anything, it just requires setting up centers, and you could set up bigger centers, you know, that could tie into power lines and distribute power in an emergency like that. I can't see why they would argue this, because it's just guaranteeing that we are energy independent, and they can't do anything to stop us, you know, overseas.
Amen. That's right. I think I really think, Stan, I don't know exactly what to base this on, or what I'm basing this statement on, except some things I've seen in the periphery of my research, that there's something going on with energy that I do believe that we're going to see some sort of announcement made by Trump or at some point soon. Just to kind of consistent with what you were saying here over the last few minutes. I've seen it posted on, I mean, Reddit, for example, some of the other forums, but again, anecdotal evidence, I suppose.
Yeah, I noticed some of the comments. There were some interesting comments on YouTube at the video where, you know, underneath people saying it. And there was one lady that wrote something about, you know, this is a very, you know, difficult patent to read for her and stuff, and she said, but you live in Colorado. Is it a secret valley you live in? Are you John Galt? You know? And it is like Atlas Shrugged a lot, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, are you?
Now, next question.
I love that.
Yes, yes.
The old famous pivot. Yeah.
Yes, it's the political stance, as it were.
Yes.
Hey, speaking of strange things, you know, all these flat earthers? Now we've got universers.
That blew my mind.
I read that today before I saw what you put on your website here. And I said, Stan's talking about flat universes? Well, I can't wait to hear this.
But it's more than that. It's the holographic, right?
Well, they're saying it's a 2D universe, you know, flat. Two dimensions, left and right, or whatever, and that projects a hologram up above it, and that's what we are and what we see as stars and all that kind of stuff. Now, the picture I've got there is from Star Wars, and you see a cone head sitting there like he's a holograph in the middle of all that, so you can see through him. But, you know, I had to laugh when I read that they're saying it's a 2D universe, it's a flat universe. I thought that does it, that rips it for me.
You know, there's a lot of people who take the I know we're not really getting into flat Earth here, but that take this very seriously, and it's just pretty interesting to see the amount of people who believe that the Earth is flat, for the just based on the way flight patterns are, and based on
all right, cue the rabid emails, because they're coming.
I know.
But how's this difference, Dan, from when they say we live in a computer simulation? Actually saying this is okay.
It's not. In their way to describe it mathematically, these physicists came up with a 2D reference plane with a projected third dimension. And, you know, that was really the way they could say it mathematically, which is shorthand for what we say with long words and sentences. But it is like a virtual reality. So you say, okay, where does the virtual reality come from? You know, well, God created it. Okay, well, is it a box that holds a virtual reality? Or, you know, is it a flat plane that projects the reality? It doesn't really matter. It's still a virtual reality, isn't it?
That's true. It's our reality, no matter what.
I can almost, the holographic part of it, I can somewhat wrap my brain around a little bit, sort of, kind of. Maybe not so much, but I don't know.
To an extent when you talk about even our bodies, everything that we touch and use is put together by, you know, millions of small particles.
Right, I get that.
Infinite amounts of space in between them. Somehow they, you know, they hold together and everything works and is functional. To me, that can only be intelligent design, a creator.
It speaks about that.
But there's people that take that information and develop other theories and alternative belief systems and I don't know. Obviously the times we live in, I can understand the opposition to scripture and the Bible and religion, but at the same time, it's the only thing that explains it. For me.
Yeah, it is. It cannot happen by happenstance all over the universe. All these things are so perfectly, you know, match and balance, and it's like a great symphony in the heavens. You know, it did not happen by random accident. All the life forms we've got on this planet that are interdependent did not happen because of a lightning strike, you know, in a pool of goo somewhere in the past. This was intelligently designed to interface and interact. And, you know, look, nowadays, you can get gloves that are pressure sensitive, put them onto your hands, they plug into your computer program. You can get goggles, you can see, you know, into a new reality. You don't see anything around you except what's in the goggles. And they don't have smell-o-vision yet, but they've got, you know, touch-o-vision. You can feel feedback from this mathematical world they create on the computer, and you can reach out and touch an object and you'll feel the pressure of it pushing back, you know, so it's like a real object. And you know, like, we could be the same kind of thing. We could be the created universe with people that the creator can feel and sense through us the world he's created us to live in. I mean, he's like we would be with the computer being the universe, and everything we see is solid and, you know, smells nice, looks nice, that kind of stuff, sounds good. All these senses that we have could be piped in to the creator, and that's why when he says, when you die, I'll have your complete record, because he's been there all the time monitoring and recording all this and however he records things. There's a complete record of every second of your existence because it's in his computer.
You know, that, correct. I mean, that makes sense to me. Because 7+ billion, that's a lot of people alive at one time.
That's just on Earth. There might be beings elsewhere, who knows?
True.
Hey, speaking of beings and genetic things, Image 8,
okay.
Startling dinosaur protein discovery. They were digging and they found living are like proteins that are amino acid strings that you could build on from a dinosaur that died 195 million years ago, according to their time scale, of course. I doubt that, but they have found this protein, which I suspect that in the future they could actually do what Jurassic Park said, and they could recreate, you know, dinosaurs from this old protein, models of their DNA.
Now, I mean, that's fascinating in itself, but my question is, I see the article talking about, you know, 195 million years. Would that be, is this something that, if it was preserved properly, it would last that long? Or are we talking about something not dating back that long?
I don't think it was older than 10 or 15,000 years at maximum.
There you go.
I'm still writing my book on Atlantis and Garden of Eden and putting them all in one book. But the opening arguments of my book tell the reader, you're going to have to enter a new paradigm. You're going to have to look at the universe in a new way, and the Earth in particular, its history, in a new way. You're going to have to look at an Earth that is now flipped upside down 180 degrees from what it was before the flood. The sun used to rise in the west before that. You're going to look at a planet that is now a third bigger in diameter than it was before the flood. You're going to look at a planet where it's not continental drift. It was catastrophic crack-up of Pangaea after an asteroid hit the Earth and broke that landmass apart into the continents. I'm telling people, you know, and time. I say, look, and you're going to have to realize that the age of things is not as they say in science. It is the best they could do under the mathematical model that they adhere to for the universe. But the big problem with the dating of it is they date everything by radiometric processes, which tell the half-life of a gas or the half-life of a carbon particles or whatever in various fossils. And that's, they say, is a constant that the decay rate of these atomic particles and stuff that they age the universe and the Earth by is a constant, but it's not a constant. Even the carbon-14 method relies on a constant depositing rate of carbon-14, you know, from the sun's interaction with our atmosphere. But that's not been constant. And when you look at the constants they're using for decay of radioactive materials, those are influenced directly by the speed of light or the speed of electromagnetic radiation in the mass of space, in the dark matter or whatever. So when you say that, and they're saying this now in new models for the cosmology, for the creation of the universe, they're saying at the Big Bang that the speed of electromagnetic radiation, light, et cetera, was 10 with 60 zeros behind it, faster than it is now, which meant that radioactive decay occurred so fast that it's not anywhere near what we're saying, that it's a constant, and so 195 million years might become 10,000 years. And that graph, okay, if you apply it to these things. And these are some of the basic things that I tell people, the readers in the book, this is what you've got to accept as the premise, the foundation for what I'm going to tell you about, finding the Garden of Eden, finding Pangaea before it broke up, finding Atlantis, you know, finding, you know, five large meteors that impacted the Earth, asteroids really impacted the Earth, you know, in its early formative stages and left footprints in the ocean and on land in China. Anyway, when I looked at this dinosaur dating thing, of course, I was more interested in the fact that they had some DNA that they, or some protein they might be able to manufacture something from. But even if they could give birth to a dinosaur, the dinosaur in our gravity would be a different kind of animal. Because if you'll notice how the dinosaurs had huge muscles and legs and, you know, their bones had a hexagonal cell structure, they were very strong beings or entities, whatever you want to call them, animals. And gravity of the Earth was greater than it is now, because the mass of the Earth as we have now was crammed down into a ball that was 25% less than it is now. We're now a third greater than it was, but 25% less is what it was if you look at our, you know, our current diameter. I'm waffling on as a scientist would at the chalkboard, but anyway, the point is that their muscles and bones were designed for heavier gravity, and that gravity made the atmosphere thicker, denser, so they had more oxygen. They were more buoyant in this thicker atmosphere. So their bone structure didn't have to be as strong as people are trying to say. They, if we created one of these dinosaurs now, they could darn near jump a building, in a, you know, a small building in a single leap. They would have trouble, they would get tired quicker because there's not as much oxygen, and they would have more trouble moving because the atmosphere is not as dense. But anyway, they wouldn't live in our environment. They were built for an environment at the beginning, designed by intelligent design.
Wow, right.
Okay.
And again, this to me goes back to the rethinking of what we've been taught, our history. It's all good.
Yeah.
And it fits right into what you're... I can't wait for your writing.
The new book, yeah. Vindicator Scrolls, yeah. Volume 2.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be quite a few months here. I've got to do that, plus some other projects I'm working on at the moment, but that require... I'll get out in the workshop and make some things and plug them in the backyard and stuff like that.
Well, sounds exciting.
On a lighter note...
Wait a second. Plug some things in the backyard. Yeah. You gonna launch some missiles or never?
Oh, no, fun things.
Okay, all right.
Energy related.
Gotcha.
Image 16 was something that I thought was really quite beautiful. If you click onto that, it goes to what's called the Glass Beach, and it's in Usuri Bay in Russia. And what has happened is it's in a cold area, you know, the part of Russia, and waves and sand being, you know, fine grain sand being thrust over the beach. But what had happened is a lot of Russian tourists and stuff had been to this beach over the years and thrown glass bottles out into the water that washed up on shore here and in the sand directly. And if you go to that site, the first thing you'll see is just, it looks like colored rocks stretched from where you are way off into the distance along this beach. And if you go down closer and look at them in the next picture, you'll see that these rocks are really glass fragments that have been polished and smoothed off by the action of sand and the waves on them. A beautiful thing, but this entire beach has got glass rocks that are smooth, not sharp. You can walk on them, and they show pictures and close-ups of them, and it's the darndest thing you'd ever want to see. It's just a beautiful, jewel-bedecked, white, sandy beach with some snow in this particular shot, stretching around this cove, and I just thought I'd share that with folks because it's such an unusual story.
That is amazing when you look at the photographs. And folks, if you're just listening to this, definitely go to standale.com, show images, and check that out. That's in the Sun publication. But wow, that's great. Remember the old rock tumblers?
Yeah.
Do they still have those?
Yeah, I've got one.
Okay. All right. Cause it used to drive my parents just crazy when I, you know, because of the noise.
Oh, yeah, well, I put it out in the workshop and let it run for a day or two or more.
That's pretty.
Yeah, it's fun. You polish your stones and stuff. Hey, yeah. One thing I want to point out to you in image 14, it's Trump sets up refugee safe zones in one day. And to tell you how the guy's mind works, okay, he can't appropriate the money and funds that he needs to build refugee centers in the Middle East. But who has tents and air conditioning set up for 3 million people over there that are not being used at the moment? The Saudi Arabians. They set up a 3 million tent or a tent village that will hold 3 million people. Every tent is air conditioned. And they only use it 2 days a year when people are making the Hajj, you know, the Muslim pilgrimage over to the western side of Saudi Arabia to Mecca. So Trump calls them up and says, hey, look, can we use this the other 363 days of the year for refugees, you know, until they get resettled? And, of course, and there's, I think the United Arab Emirates is going to help in that respect, too. But all these things, with one phone call to the Saudi Prince Mohammed bin Salman, I just
makes
think
you wonder, that, makes you wonder how the last administration spent their time. How the last administration spent their time, or were they using those phone calls to work against the interests of the people?
I know. It's just, you know, I'm so proud of the man. He's just doing things that are out of the box, you know, and they work. And he's keeping his word doing it. But I tell you what, it's going to make a change in the world. It is making a change.
Joe came up with a term, a phrase yesterday, culture or whiplash, or cultural whiplash. No.
Anyway. I think that'd probably be true. I tell you what, he's putting the cat amongst the pigeons, isn't he?
He is indeed. Well, Stan, you did it. You took us to the end of the program already. Man, that was a fast hour. That was great.
Yeah, we didn't get it all covered, but it's up there for people to look at.
Indeed. Standale.com. That's Standale.com. Our good friend Stan and the Holy Dale.
Yeah, you guys have a great evening.
Yeah.
God bless you. Lord bless you now.
All right.
Bye-bye.
That'll do it for us tonight, folks.
Until tomorrow.
Yeah.
Stay safe. Have a good night. And we will be back tomorrow. We have a great show for the rest of the week planned, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So make sure you tune in back here tomorrow evening at 7 p.m.
Buckle in.
Have a good night.